It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. Well, Wisconsin's a spooky place at this time of year, and I'm not talking about the election. Lots of lore-filled destinations, haunted houses, ghost tours, and all kinds of other fun stuff. Not to mention pumpkin patches, corn mazes, costume contests. Well, the list goes on. What's your favorite spooky scene? Do you prefer a man-made haunted house tour, or would you rather explore an eerie place in nature? Tell us about your haunted Wisconsin experience. Where were you? What happened? Do you love all things scary? It's a family affair. Maybe everyone else likes creepy places, and you'd rather stay away safe and sound. We'll share your thoughts. 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Ideas@WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Stephanie Klett is Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Tourism, and a spooky good morning, Stephanie.
Good morning, John.
So some people hate getting scared. Other people love it, especially this time of year. So, Stephanie, let's get personal right off the bat. Which camp do you fall in?
I am camp non-scary, but once a year, I will grin and bear it and go with friends for something haunted. Once a year. That's it. That's all I got in me. How about you?
You're a better human being than I am, Stephanie Klett, because I just don't like being scared, period. Hosting several hours a day of talk radio is as scary as I want to be.
Well, that's pretty scary.
Yeah, well, it depends on what day you ask. Okay, so that's enough psychology for now. Let's cater to the thrill seekers for a bit, and because there's money to be made here somewhere. Where can people find Wisconsin's most haunted destinations?
Well, I've got about five of them for you. And let's start in our biggest city of Milwaukee, downtown Pfister Hotel. So the Pfister Hotel opened in 1893, of course. It's always a top-rated hotel property, not only in Wisconsin, but throughout the country. So it was opened by Charles Pfister, and it is rumored that he is still hanging around the property today. He's been spotted on the marble grand staircase. He teases visiting professional baseball players during their stays in the hotel, because you got to remember, this is the 1890s, so baseball was the sport. So I love it because USA Today did a big story. And they reported that one baseball player, these are professional baseball players, was spooked enough that he actually had to sleep with his bat. Another baseball player left his room to sleep on the couch in the lobby. I wish I would have been there to see that. Some of the other baseball players have even sought alternative lodging down the street. They're like, no way, not going to be scared. They have the John Munson philosophy. So they've reported hearing strange pounding noises in the night. Then they awake to find clothes and furniture have been moved or windows and blinds are open. But I think my favorite is one Minnesota Twins player said his iPod started playing inexplicably and vibrating across the table on the other side of the room twice. So
wow.
If you want a haunted destination, the beautiful Pfister Hotel in Milwaukee is your place to go and spend the night.
That is so cool. Well, yeah, athletes are a superstitious group anyway, so I don't think it takes too much to spook them.
Well, and I think us folks that are watching the athletes are a little superstitious ourselves.
Oh, absolutely.
I've got my game day. Yeah, I've got my game day traditions.
Yeah. So what else we got?
Well, the next place I take you to is Oshkosh. And there's an opera house. Again, it's historical, built 10 years before the Pfister Hotel in 1883, called The Grand. And they say it's one of the most haunted locations in Wisconsin. So it's a beautifully restored Victorian theater, and they have a number of paranormal sightings that have taken place over the years. So according to the Oshkosh Northwestern, theater guests and performers have seen an apparition of a former stage manager watching from a seat in the balcony during rehearsals and peering out second floor windows. Okay, that just creeps me out.
So there really is a phantom in the opera.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Oh, did we just lose Stephanie? Uh-oh, that's spooky. All right. Well, while we reconnect with Stephanie, let me ask you, what's your favorite spooky place? 800-642-1234. Where do you go when you want to get really scared? And don't say your mother-in-law's house. 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Talk at WPR.org. Excuse me, ideas at WPR.org. I went old school there for a second. Those are both great ways to get in touch with us this morning. 800-642-1234. Maybe you have a favorite non-scary place you like to go to for Halloween. Someplace you can take the kids, a corn maze. What's your favorite destination? Let us know. 800-642-1234. Did we get Stephanie back?
You are. You did.
Wow. You know, I think maybe this broadcast is cursed.
I think we're being haunted because I haven't moved. I am sitting down.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's blame insert provider here. Now, we've talked about Milwaukee and Oshkosh. Let's move a little farther north because you've got a place up in the North Woods that's kind of spooky, too.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, we love our supper clubs in Wisconsin. And, you know, they're about 100 years old. And one of the oldest supper clubs in the whole state, you'll find in Minocqua. It's called Norwood Pines, and it is just one of my favorites. And it was once a popular gangster dinner spot. So this restaurant's known for, you know, great old fashions and great food. It's number one on TripAdvisor for places to go in Minocqua for restaurants. But it's also known for its ghost, Edgar. Now, I don't know about you, but Edgar is a name that doesn't really scare me. But
yeah, no,
Edgar,
it doesn't.
Right. Uh-oh, look at it. It's creepy Edgar. But Edgar died in the hotel above the restaurant and haunts the restaurant in his trench coat. So the owners have been known to leave a glass of brandy on the bar to see if he'll come out. And a lot of patrons claim to have been tapped on the shoulder or have a hand on their back, and they turn around and nobody's there. It's Edgar.
Well, you know, if you leave a glass of brandy on a bar unattended in Wisconsin, you know it's going to disappear.
Yeah, we hate to break it to them. It ain't the ghost.
Yeah, I was just going to say. All right. You know, we're having way too much fun here. One of us is going to be in trouble, and I don't think it's going to be you. Let's move on to another location then. What else we have in this section?
All right, let's take you to two other places in southwest Wisconsin. So one of them is the Boscobel Hotel in Boscobel. So this hotel was built on the same site of an old burned-down saloon. So some say that the Boscobel Hotel is haunted by its original owner, who was a man named Adam Bobble, and he died in 1881. Another theory why it's haunted is that an orphan girl named Snowflake, you can't make that up.
Oh, man.
Snowflake was abandoned outside the hotel and returned there from beyond the grave. So today the hotel is once again a bar. It has fine dining in the evenings on you know, Thursday through Saturday. But a lot of people that go there say you will feel the presence of something and that, you know, you have that kind of air feeling that gives you the goosebumps. So people claim it about the Boscobel Hotel. Find out for yourself. And last, I have for you the Old Baraboo Inn in Baraboo.
So I'm gonna ask you to hold the Old Baraboo Inn for just a moment because that music tells me we have to step aside for just a sec. We're taking a spooky tour around the state of Wisconsin with Wisconsin Secretary of Tourism Stephanie Klatt. We want to know what your favorite spooky or fun Halloween place is in the Badger State. 800-642-1234. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. We're talking about all things spooky and things fun in Wisconsin and Halloween with Stephanie Klatt, Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Tourism, and with you if you care to join us at 800-642-1234. Stephanie, when last we left this conversation, we were in Baraboo. Let's pick it up.
Well, and this is my last kind of destination place for folks to visit. It's called the Old Baraboo Inn. And it's a formal brothel and watering hole, and it now operates as a tavern with upstairs apartments. So the inn's most famous guest is Mary, and she's a woman who died in the building in the early 1900s and has been known to appear cavorting in her saloon dancer dress. And what I love is the owner is a man named B.C. Farr, and he said, "I don't care if people think I'm crazy. I have seen this stuff." He told the Wisconsin State Journal that he's seen everything from dishware flying off a rack, a broom floating across the kitchen, doors opening and closing by themselves. And he said he's just learned to embrace the paranormal activity, and he loves taking guests on ghost hunts. So if you want a little tour, Old Bear Boo Inn is a great place to go.
So speaking of tours, these places offer tours, or can we just drop in and be scared?
A little bit of both. They don't have anything set up formally, but once, especially the smaller places like Boscobel Hotel and the Old Bear Boo Inn, you know, those places, it's hard not to meet the owner. So oftentimes they'll just get to talking with you and off you go.
Is there a cost? Do we need tickets?
Oh, no, not for this. But we've got some things that you do need tickets for.
Let's talk about some of those, because we're going to run out of time way before we run out of content here, which is actually a good thing to have happen if you're on the radio.
So we have some of the top-rated haunted houses in America. And one of them, and it is scary. I did this one time, and I'm never doing it again. It's called Terror on the Fox, and it's in Green Bay. And it's hosted by the National Railroad Museum, which is, you know, an incredible place. So that's why I thought, oh, yeah, we'll take a train ride, get a little, you know, a little scared, and then you come back. Oh, man, there's a reason they call it Terror on the Fox and not just Scared on the Fox. So this has been going on, Terror on the Fox, for 20 years. It has one of the largest single haunted houses in the Midwest. It was voted one of the best haunted houses in America by hauntedhouses.com, which is a website dedicated to haunted attractions and real-life paranormal sites. But you literally board that vintage train. So you get on a train, and it brings you to the haunted houses in the woods at night, where you can explore one of the two haunted houses. Each one of them has their own storyline, and they change, and they are scary. They change every year. Mm. So it's open every weekend through November 3rd, so there's still time to go. They do have some weeknights leading up to Halloween, so check their website. But they do a special matinee for kids on Sunday, October 28th, so that's not quite as scary. So if you want to bring the kids out, you can do that. But Terror on the Fox in Green Bay at the National Railroad Museum, it is scary. It's terrifying.
Okay. I'm scared already. So Wisconsin, there's one in Waukesha. There's a haunted house in Waukesha.
Oh, man. And I'm telling you, this one, John, don't put this one on your list, because this place is not for the faint of heart. Again, this was voted a USA Today 10 Best Haunted Attractions and the number one haunted house in America by Haunted Attraction Magazine. Don't you love they actually have magazines for haunted houses and attractions? So Feargrounds in Waukesha has three separate haunted houses, and each one takes you through a different part of a haunted Victorian manor. So this year, they have an all-new escape room called Anguish. And, you know, escape rooms are so popular right now. But this one is haunted, and it lasts a full hour. There's just no way I'm doing it. There's no way. So tickets start at $15, depending on the attraction. The last day to visit the Feargrounds is this Saturday. So if you want to truly be spooked, three haunted houses in one, Wisconsin Feargrounds and Waukesha is the one you don't want to miss.
Well, now this next one reminds me of my show, Dead by Dawn. But I've died in the first hour lots of times. This is a bed and breakfast up in Manitowoc?
Okay, this place is so awesome because it's Halloween every night of the year. This is the world's first dead and breakfast, not bed and breakfast, dead and breakfast. And their goal is for you to get an unrestful night's sleep. So it's located in downtown Manitowoc in a historic building, beautiful, built in 1851. So you start your evening with an unhappy hour in the shrunken headroom. So before an evening of unexpected visits from the living and the dead. So when you get to the bed and breakfast, you can have this unhappy hour. Then go explore Manitowoc, but you have to be back to the bed and breakfast by 11 because they lock the doors. And you have to be in your room and ready for bed by midnight, and that's when the haunting starts. So you're going to be haunted throughout the night in many different ways.
So Jamie Lee Curtis shows up and screams? I don't know. All right. Hang on. I want to get to some non-spooky things.
Oh, you bet.
This trip is getting too scary for me. Where can people go to find some plain old, good old seasonal fun?
Well, you know what? I'd send you to Lodi because they have a place called Trinan Farms, and they have a corn maze every year that is just fantastic. This year's corn maze is called The Elephant's Child, so it's a big elephant, and it's based on the Kipling story, The Elephant's Child. So it's just so much fun. They have a pumpkin patch. They have wagon rides that are pulled by beautiful Belgian draft horses. The farm's 14 acres of pumpkin patches. They have 15 different varieties of pumpkins. So it's open through the end of October. They also do a Zompocalypse. So it's the corn maze at night with a zombie theme. And afterwards, they have a big zombie-themed dance and party. So Trinan Farms in Lodi is just a great place to go with family.
Zombies. Hey, I like zombies. Zombies are cool. Okay, so Trinan Farms. Do they shoot pumpkins out of cannons or from medieval siege weapons or anything like that?
No, that I don't remember. Okay. It's been a couple years since I've been to Trinan Farms, but usually they have pumpkin cannons, which are really cool.
Yeah, well, we had a guy on last week from Rice Lake who was they were throwing them out of trebuchets, and that sounded like really cool fun. Let's try something in Lake Geneva. What do we got going on there?
Well, Lake Geneva is just a full destination because they do a ghost walk. They have a walking tour of Lake Geneva, which also gives you a little scoop on a bank robbery. They have the Booze and Brews Halloween Bash at Lake Long Resort. But one of my favorite is Lake Geneva Canopy Tours. This weekend they're doing the Fall Fest and Pumpkin Drop. So if you do the zip line, the Lake Geneva Canopy Tour, it's one of the longest zip lines in America. When you finish your canopy tour on the racing zip line, you can aim a pumpkin to hit the center of a bullseye painted on the ground. So land it just right, you win a prize. But they have, you know, these great trails for hiking. They have live music. They have a fun scavenger hunt. So that's Lake Geneva is a great one. And they're also doing the American Horror Film Festival tonight and tomorrow at the Geneva Theater. So they're going to have all these different horror movie short films, documentaries from around the country.
Did I mention that I'm also afraid of heights? Well, actually, it's not afraid of heights. I'm afraid of depths. So some people are just looking for an excuse to wear a clever costume. Where can we find that excuse in Wisconsin?
Well, you know what? They recommend, like, any corn maze in Wisconsin. And for a listing, go to travelwisconsin.com. That is the state's official travel website. We have 15,000 places and attractions listed. And so we will have, you know, any kind of Halloween activity that you want is listed there. Because there's so many things that are doing, you know, everything from trunk or treating, trick or treating, attractions, businesses, a lot of smaller towns do a Halloween get together. So kids come into their stores, they hand out treats, and you get special sales. So if you want to wear a costume, there is a place to wear a costume in the state.
So what costume are you wearing?
I am going as the Limburger Queen. And
the Limburger Queen?
Well, you know, the Green County Cheese Days did make me a Limburger Queen in perpetuity this year. So it was a title I won 6 years ago, and so now it's forever. So it's not really a costume, but people think it is because they're like, obviously, nobody has a Limburger Queen. So I have a bright blue feather boa, and the sash they gave me that says Limburger Queen Forever was made by the same sash company that makes the Miss America banner. Oh, it is bejeweled, and I've got a Limburger Queen crown. Oh, yeah, I'm going as Limburger Queen.
So does it smell like Limburger, too, or is it... Is
well,
this just a visual?
Since Limburger is stinky, I promise as Limburger Queen to always smell nice.
All right. If you don't mind telling us, where are you headed for Halloween fun this year?
Well, I'm actually sticking in my home area of Beloit, But I am road tripping it a whole 33 miles to Lake Geneva. So I'm going to do the Lake Geneva ghost tour walk, which I have never done. So this will be a first for me.
That sounds like fun. Stephanie, always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks, John.
Stephanie Klett is the Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Tourism. TravelWisconsin.com. Check it out. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm John Munson. Stick around. Lots more fun to come.
Spooky, scary skeletons and shivers down your spine. Shrieking skulls will shock your soul and seal your doom tonight. Spooky, scary skeletons speak with such a screech. You'll shake and shudder in surprise when you hear these zombies shriek. We're so sorry, skeletons, you're so misunderstood. You only want to socialize,
but I don't think we should.
A spooky, scary skeleton shouts startling, shrilly screams. They'll sneak under sarcophagus and just won't leave you be.
It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a story about fuzzy lawn care.
Cute, furry, and can take care of pesky weeds and invasive species? Goats! While the idea of using goats to cull vegetation on property may sound out of this world for some, it's a full-time job for others. On a recent sunny day, WPR's Andrea Anderson met a herd of goats that are quite possibly the cutest weed killers of all time.
Here goats! Here goats! Here goats!
They're trained to come when I call here goats and shake a bucket of corn. They will come galloping back to me, and I train them to chase me. My name is Kim Hunter. And I own a target grazing business called the Green Goats. And what I do is I rent out herds of goats to eat weeds and brush and restore the land to its native glory. Yeah, I've been doing the grazes since 2008, so I've been doing it for 10 years. So we've covered a lot of mileage. So goats are an old world grazer. So most of our invasive plants are old world plants. And it's in their DNA to like them. Goats love rose bushes too, and they love multiflora rose, which is a huge problem in this state. Goats love it. Goats will take it down, and then it'll regrow, and they'll take it down, and it'll regrow, and they'll take it down, and eventually it stops regrowing. And that's how we get rid of buckthorn and all the other woody perennials. We just keep grazing them until the plant is out of energy. People will use other animals. They'll use sheep. Some people will use pigs if you want things rooted up. Pigs are nature's bulldozers, but pigs really tear everything up. But the goats have more of a broad palate than the other animals. The sheep, you know, they will graze tree branches only up as high as they can reach without taking their feet off the ground, whereas the goats will stand up on their hind legs. So these really big males will go up about 6.5 feet.
All right, is everyone ready to go out and eat?
Where they're working right now, they're eating a lot of ragweed. They really love the flowers. There's some goldenrod out here. I see one of the goats is eating milkweed. Doesn't seem to bother them at all. They really do pretty nice work. They do what I call park things out. They trim all the lower branches off the trees in the yard so that I can walk through. They're all 6 feet high, just cut even. And it looks like I had a bunch of landscapers in. Well, I did have a bunch of landscapers in there. It's just that they're the four-footed variety, not the two-legged variety with chainsaws. There's several strategies for using goats. Some people do not want to do any handwork themselves, and they just have the goats come in once a year. And even once a year in a buckthorn choked forest, every year it'll get more open. And another strategy would be to have the goats come in and have them come back twice, and like I said, then a third time with them, or clear cut. I've been hired by beekeepers to graze around the hives because the lawnmowers and the weed killers would be very bad for the bees. But the goats can sneak in and out and not get stung. Along stream banks, you do not want to be spraying chemicals around that stuff because it gets into the water and then it's in the groundwater and the surface water. It gets everywhere. So there's more to it than just clearing land. People really enjoy the animals themselves. But the environment is a big part of it. They just don't want, they don't want to cause damage. They want to solve the problems without adding further damage to the environment, to the soil.
That story was produced by WPR's Andrea Anderson. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook. I'm Maureen McCollum.
Here's a little Wisconsin-flavored food riddle. What's a Wisconsin invention that's also a supper club staple? Here's a hint. There's a secret recipe involved. The answer is broasted chicken. Hot, tasty, juicy, flavorful broasted chicken. It's right up there with Friday fish fry, and it was invented right here in Wisconsin. So let me ask you, is it a tradition for you to go out for broasted chicken? Tell us about it. And where do you go? Where in Wisconsin can you get the best broasted chicken, in your opinion? Do you attempt to broast your own chicken? And are you willing to share your recipe? 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Ideas at WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Daniel Higgins is the food and drink reporter for USA Today Network Wisconsin. His recent piece is titled, Broasted Chicken is a Wisconsin Invention and Supper Club Staple. The recipe is a secret. Daniel, good morning. Welcome to the morning show.
Well, thanks for having me on.
I have a feeling that most Wisconsinites listening will know, but just in case, tell us what broasted chicken is.
It's basically, in essence, it's like taking a deep fryer and then putting or using like a pressure cooker at the same time. So you're instead of like if you were to put something in a regular pressure cooker, you'd add a little bit of water, you get some steam, whatever, and that would speed up the process of the cooking. Well, here in essence, you're using the hot oil instead. So what you're doing is it cooks the chicken a lot quicker than it would if you just traditionally deep fried it. The quicker cook means you lose less juice. It seals everything in, and the shorter you can get something at temperature, the juicier the meat is. That's just the general way it works.
How would you describe the look and taste of broasted chicken?
It's super juicy. It's almost, to me, sometimes you get it, and it's, I'm so used to at home when I cook chicken, no matter how well I do, it always seems to, if it goes just a little too long, it gets dry pretty easy, and it's always so juicy to me. I'm always like, did they really cook this all the way, which they have because the juices are clear, but it's really amazing to me how juicy it is all the way through. The other thing is because they marinate it a little bit ahead of time and they have a dusting that goes on there, that all the way through you're getting that kind of same flavor that you get from the crispy skin, which is kind of the good bits of fried chicken anyway. But I think with their process, it's just you get that flavor all the way through, even long after you've gobbled up all that skin.
And that's kind of what sets it apart from just regular fried chicken, isn't it, that the flavor does go all the way through?
I think so. For the most part, maybe there's someone out there doing fried chicken that has found some way to do it, but I think that's the defining to me part of it is that you get this flavor all the way through in every bite.
So the pressure fryer, the combination of pressure and deep frying, is really what makes this ideal because, as you said, it cooks fast and all the way through and lots of flavor. So let's talk about the history of this technique. Who was the inventor? L.A.M. Phelan? What did he set out to do?
Basically, he was a guy, inventor, in the Beloit area, and he's been credited with a lot of other inventions too that I didn't quite get into in the article because I couldn't quite fully track down everything. But he wanted fried chicken, but he wanted it quicker than the normal cooking time. So he thought, well, what if we take a pressure fryer and a pressure cooker and deep fryer and kind of combine them somehow? Would that work? up to when he invented it, you know, before that, pressure cookers were kind of, had gotten kind of popular, but then kind of gotten dangerous, where because if you weren't, they didn't have safety features in them before, like they do now. If you buy pressure cookers now, there's little valves and backup systems so you don't blow up your pressure cooker, but that wasn't the case. So they kind of fall a little bit out of favor, but he had found a way to combine the two into one machine. And what's interesting, too, is what the folks at Broster talked about is that the pot that it goes into is a cylindrical shape. It's kind of round, which creates this, as it's under pressure there, creates a little bit of a vortex, so everything gets done more evenly with that kind of shape that they've got.
Yeah, sure, no corners. That makes sense. So the Broster Company formed in Beloit in 1953. How did the invention spread after that?
It was basically, you know, it was really a great way for, if you're a local restaurant, you could have this broasted chicken without having to become KFC or become a full-blown chain, you know. Like,
right.
If you wanted to do Culver's, you have to be Culver's and do everything. But you can serve broasted chicken, and the official broasted chicken, and as long as the pressure fryer fits in your kitchen, that's fine. You can still be whoever, you know, Von Abel's Supper Club or Hobnobs, or I don't know if they're in there, but, you know, whatever your supper club or your restaurant is, you just keep your name, but you have broasted chicken as part of your menu options. You can still do your Friday fish fry and your Saturday night prime rib, and it just kind of fits in with everything else. And I think that kind of versatility really helped it spread.
And the broasting technique and the recipe that's involved with the official broasted chicken, which is copyrighted and trademarked and legally protected 6 ways from Sunday, that's all part of the of what goes along with this as well. And we're going to talk some more about that as our conversation continues here, Daniel. I want to ask our listeners: Is it tradition in your family to go out for broasted chicken? Where do you like to go for broasted chicken? Give us your broasted chicken story. Maybe tell us about the first time you ever tried it and what that was like. And where do you think the best broasted chicken in Wisconsin might be? 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. I have to say, I had breakfast this morning, but talking about broasted chicken is making me hungry again. 800-642-1234. Tell us your broasted chicken stories. Daniel Higgins is the food and drink reporter for USA Today Network Wisconsin, and he stays with us as our conversation continues. I'm John Munson. It's the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and this is The Morning Show. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. Broasted chicken is a Wisconsin invention and supper club staple. Is it a tradition for you to go out for broasted? Tell us about it. Where do you go? Where do you think they have the best broasted chicken, in your opinion? And do you attempt to broast your own chicken? Are you willing to share your recipe? 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Daniel Higgins is the food and drink reporter for USA Today Network Wisconsin. His recent piece is titled Broasted Chicken is a Wisconsin Invention and Supper Club Staple. The recipe is a secret. Daniel, let's talk about that recipe. There's the broasting equipment, but there's a special marinade and spices. Tell us about those.
Yeah, so basically when you say, yeah, I'm going to be a broaster, then you're committed to buying a marinade that, you know, the chicken goes into for a little while before, you know, before it gets patted dry and then dusted with this blend of seasonings that basically is remained pretty much the same since the pressure fryer was also concocted with it. And that's the thing, too, is when at the facility in Beloit there, they're not only do they make all the machines right there from, I mean, they bring in the metal and all the pieces, nothing's prefabricated, so they're building machines right in Beloit. They also, in that same building, you know, obviously kind of portioned off for to meet food, you know, quality standards and everything. They bring in all their salt and pepper and all the different seasonings and blend them together and then send those out packaged all over, all across the world. I mean, they've got a place in India. There is even a Facebook page, Grocers of India Facebook page. But so, yeah, that's basically the program. They do a lot of other, they do up to like 40 or 50 different kinds of coatings. They'll work with restaurants if they want to come up with different, if they order, if they can order enough in bulk. But because there's roasted pork chops, there's so there's different, there's a program for that as well.
So this is all trademarked and copyrighted and legally fenced off. I mean, you can't call your chicken broasted chicken if it doesn't come out of one of their broasters, correct?
If it doesn't come out of one of the broasters, and you need to be using their seasonings and marinades and everything else. You could buy one of the machines and then not use their seasonings, I guess, if you really wanted to. But yeah, to be able to say we're a genuine broasted chicken is trademarked, absolutely.
And because I know there's probably a little confusion about that. In fact, I have to say that until I read your article, I was a little confused about it, because there was a restaurant I've gone to in northern Wisconsin for years that I thought had broasted chicken. Turns out they don't. It's still good. But let's talk about some famous places in Wisconsin that are broasted chicken places. What makes them unique?
One of the more famous ones is Von Abel's up here in Hollandtown. It's a supper club. They've been around since 1848, and they've got four broasters in one little area lined up next to each other, and another one in the second part of their kitchen. So they have like five different broasters up there that they're cranking through on chicken. It's a very popular spot for banquets and wedding receptions and all that. I talked to Parnell's place down in Oshkosh, which is they do quite a bit of chicken. And one year they were what Broster will every year kind of hand out awards to their kind of operator of the year for they have done, you know, they do large amounts of sales. So those are both places that have in the past won that award. Schuster's up in Denmark, another long-standing tradition place that they've been around since the early 1900s. So you can see like a lot of these very traditional places adapted to these broasters and have really enjoyed them and have stuck with it, obviously, because people really enjoy it and it's a quick way to turn around a lot of food.
Let's take a call here. Nicole is with us in Fremont. Good morning, Nicole.
Good morning, gentlemen. You're making me really hungry this morning.
Yeah, I'm doing it to myself too. Gosh, I could really go for some broasted chicken right now. What's your story?
I absolutely love roasted chicken. I didn't really truly fall in love with fried chicken until I understood the difference between whatever fried chicken and broaster fried chicken. I specifically look for that red and white logo, and that's the only time I eat any kind of fried chicken is when somewhere will advertise that they have specific, that I know exactly what the logo looks like because that's the only one that I go for. And luckily, a lot of places around me do have roasters. But I look for the logo, and that's the only time I order it. And it is always good, no matter where I go, if they're using your equipment and that seasoning.
All right, Nicole, thanks for your broasted chicken story. There's a satisfied customer right there for the broaster people. And I have to say, one of our producers, Jana Roche Leis, has been going to Schuster's in Denmark with her family since she was a kid and was delighted to see it noted in your story. So this has become a Wisconsin tradition, what, because it's easy for supper clubs to be able to serve chicken in a hurry and it tastes good. I guess that's all they needed, right?
Yeah, I think so. It's a convenient way. The other thing that they also talked about is it's a fairly easy process. It's not, and especially as they continue to innovate, you know, the it used to be you had to kind of keep an eye on, you know, you keep an eye on the machine and the time that you know you have it in there. You know, you drop it in, you got to watch the time. There's some, you might have to make some slight adjustments on
right
for things. And now it's pretty much I think one of the operating vice president or whatever. He's like, if you know what a picture of a chicken looks like, you can run our broasters now, because it's, you know, they've added the screens and you and you can push a, you drop it in, you push a button, and boom, that's it. It'll beep when it's done and release all the steam and everything else. So
in radio, we call that making things idiot-proof.
Right.
So the chicken isn't the only thing that you can drop into one of these broasters. There's a lot of other stuff that's being done, too.
Yep, absolutely. Like I said, the pork chops is something that can be done. They also have developed a separate line of, now they got something they call Broaster Express, which then is designed more for like your convenience stops, and they've developed a series of like flash frozen foods that can be dropped in there as well. They've come out this year with a beer battered cheese curd, specifically designed for their broaster equipment. They do at these apple pies, which I tried one of when I was
man.
Out. And
you're
like,
you're killing me here.
If you remember, like McDonald's when they used to deep fry their apple pies, and how good it's like that, but even a little better because it's kind of, they use these Granny Smiths, so you get a little bit more of the tart in the apple. So I mean, that's fantastic. So yeah, they've found different ways of expanding and making it so that, like, if you're in a convenience store, like, and you don't have necessarily the room to be prepping raw chicken and doing all that, you can still find a way to be part of the broaster company.
And studies have shown that broasting makes the food slightly healthier than it would be had it been traditionally deep fried. Explain why that is.
Again, that comes to with the pressure. It kind of seals it off. It prevents more of the oil from getting in, because it's sealing off in the quick cooking time. And healthier doesn't necessarily mean healthy. It's just a little bit less of the fat, a little bit fewer calories. Yeah.
So do you think, is this a process that we could recreate in our own kitchens, or are we just going to have to go out for it?
I'm not sure. Honestly, okay. I've thought about that. I'm not entirely sure.
I don't think I'm going to experiment with it. It would probably explode. One of the things I was struck by reading your story was the number of pounds of chicken one of these restaurants can go through on a Saturday or on a Friday or Saturday night. Holy cow.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, they've pulled out examples. I think I used the Brass Rail from Minnesota as one example of what they're going through in a week. And Parnell's Place, which is really, if you've been there, it's a very small little place. It's not, like some big banquet hall-y thing. And they're, over 1,000 1,000 pieces, 1,000 pounds. Yeah.
Oh, man, that's a lot of chicken. Daniel Higgins, thanks so much for a delicious conversation. I really appreciate it.
No problem. Well, thank you for having me on.
Daniel Higgins, food and drink reporter for USA Today Network, Wisconsin. I'm John Munson. It's The Morning Show. You're listening to the Mouthwatering Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.